Hey, John.
Hey, Sean.
So lots of stuff we could talk about in state government and politics from this week. What caught your eye?
Gosh, I mean, the governor called another special session, this time about using a budget surplus for education.
Yeah, the governor wants to spend $250 million on education, but Republican lawmakers want to spend it all on tax cuts.
Yep, and then Assembly Republicans came out with their own plan about how they want to address some of the challenges faced by dairy farmers.
Yeah, the governor called a special session on that a few weeks ago. He wants to spend $8.5 million on farmers. Assembly Republicans say they want to spend even more.
And then seemingly out of nowhere, there's this bill trying to extend bar hours in Milwaukee and surrounding counties during the DNC.
Yep, they want to make that money from people coming in from out of town who visit for the DNC.
You know, Sean, I'm kind of sensing a theme here.
Oh, yeah?
It's like cash rules everything around me.
Cream?
Get the money. This is the WBR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
And I'm Sean Johnson.
This week, dollar-dollar bills, y'all. Dollar-dollar bills, y'all. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar-dollar bill, y'all. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar-dollar bill, y'all. And that, of course, is the 1993 hit Cream from Wu-Tang Clan and their debut album, Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
We both admire Wu-Tang quite a bit, John, and we've been kind of waiting to play some kind of a Wu-Tang song.
It's been a long time.
I got to say,
it
though,
feels good.
Doing that intro, I feel very square somehow.
It's because we're both very square.
It's very, but I feel it, though.
But we're doing what we love.
Yes, we are.
So obviously, first things first, Laurel White is not with us this week. She's off enjoying someplace warm.
She'll be back next week for some very busy legislative sessioning.
And maybe we'll play some more Wu-Tang.
Yeah, and it's never too late for us to start our own rap trio that grows into, you know, like maybe 6, 9, 12, 20 people.
However many are in the Wu-Tang Clan at the moment, I'm not sure that the count.
Pick them up along the way, put out our own solo albums, guest on our own, each other's solo albums. It's a good business model.
It is. It really is. They sort of revolutionized the hip-hop game.
But for now, let's talk about revenue projections and what it means for Wisconsin state government.
What a segue there, Sean.
So revenue projections came out in January, and they showed that Wisconsin was taking in $818 million more than previously projected, or that Wisconsin is projected to take in $818 million more than previously thought. So these are estimates, projections put out regularly by the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, the legislature's nonpartisan budget office. I mean, they are very highly respected. People watch for these estimates. You know, you want to talk about what gets people kind of scurrying at the Capitol, and it's like these estimates.
Oh my God, these LFB projections came out.
There's really nothing that I can think of that is more awaited than an LFB projection, because especially when there's so much more that they have to work with, and in an election year, no less, yeah, that's kind of a big deal. So what it meant when the LFB put out those numbers is that because there was going to be such a large projected surplus, that triggered an automatic deposit into the state's budget stabilization fund, commonly referred to as the rainy day fund.
So, I call it the budget stabilization fund.
Yeah,
commonly.
You are a stickler for the proper names, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I just like rainy day fund because I can identify with it.
I actually now just forgot what the official name is. Yeah. I was going to say it again, but now I can't.
Yeah, it's a rainy day because, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes when it rains, you need money and you better put it away.
You know, it's raining outside and you're bored, so you want to go buy a new Wu-Tang album.
That's right. That's right. That's how people do it. Good thing we saved up. So there is, at the end of the day, I guess, after that deposit's made in the rainy day fund, the state still is going to end this 2-year budget cycle with about $450 million more than was previously projected. Mm-hmm. So almost immediately, Republicans are out there saying, we're going to use this to cut taxes. And they have been really all over the place in terms of what that tax cut would look like. You know, what Senator Scott Fitzgerald, who was kind of first out of the gate with this, was talking about was some type of a property tax cut that would go through like the technical colleges. He seems to be thinking that's kind of ancient history now.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I mean, the LFB projections came out a while ago. Also, Scott Fitzgerald has been talking about some sort of property tax cut for a while. What are some of the new developments here?
The new development this week is that we heard what the governor wants to do with this. And he came out at a state capitol press conference and said he wants to spend it on schools. He wants to spend $250 million of it on schools, that is. A good portion of that, $130 million, would go toward the state's equalization aid formula.
Mm-hmm. Which is, what is that?
I don't think that has a slang nickname, really. There's no, like...
Well, it's the two-thirds support model or whatever,
well,
right?
Because of the way that the school aid formula is figured, it would mean that the state would be picking up two-thirds of the cost of public education, which is a benchmark that it hit once upon a time, started back in the mid-90s, back when state government had a surplus and there was talk about what to do with it. But the state has moved away from that for quite a while now.
And so now school districts are paying more than two-thirds, or their one-third. They're paying more than their one-third of their costs through things like referendums and such.
And the state has teetered up there close to that two-thirds benchmark, but hasn't quite crossed it. So Governor Evers is saying, hey, we have this opportunity here. We have this revenue surplus. Let's put it into schools, and we're going to go back to covering two-thirds of the cost of education. Also, a large portion of this money would be devoted toward school-based mental health funding, which is something that we have heard Republican lawmakers in the past speak about favorably quite frequently. You know, when there have been incidents of gun violence, that's been something that people like Governor Walker, for example, have come out and said, we need to spend more on school-based mental health. And then there's also a big chunk of money in the governor's plan, Governor Evers' plan, that would go towards special education. So, That's his plan on the table. And he's saying, hey, remember that letter that you guys sent me, you guys Republican lawmakers sent me back in January of 2019? Let me refresh your memory. Here's the letter.
Yeah, that was interesting to me because I did not remember the letter.
I vaguely remembered it. I mean, I remembered because, well, I vaguely remembered it. And so like...
Because we established earlier, you're very square.
It's very true. It's way true. Oh man. I how can I like simultaneously be so square and enjoy Wu-Tang so much? I don't know.
It's a
little incongruous. But which is a good word for a rap album.
This is a good word for a square.
It really is.
So the letter.
So he had sent this letter, or Assembly Republicans had sent the governor this letter, saying, here are things we can support. We know you're new here, Governor. Here are things on which we can work together. And one of those things was a return to two-thirds school funding.
Mm-hmm.
So the governor says, hey.
We have this money now.
I know you want to do this, and we have this money now, and my plan would do this, so I expect broad bipartisan support for my plan.
Mm-hmm. And so is he seeming to get broad bipartisan support for the plan so far?
He is not. We've heard really from, at this point, the legislative leaders, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, and they pretty much said, no, we're not going to do your plan. You know, that we supported going back to two-thirds funding back when it was part of the budget, but we're not going to do it now. Mm-hmm. I think...
Because, like, what we want now is a tax cut.
Right. I mean, Senator Fitzgerald's tweets, which is how we heard from him, were basically saying, look, the governor knows what we want to do. We want to do tax cuts. I don't see us budging on this.
Right. I think one of the interesting things that came up for me is the way that Governor Evers sort of tried to spin the education spending into what he says is a tax cut. He's saying, look, if we go back to this two-thirds funding for state funding for education, then local municipalities and school districts won't be having to raise taxes to pay for their own education. So that's kind of a tax cut too, right?
And it's, I mean, there's truth to that, right? That this stuff is all connected, and that if you pour more state money into the school aid formula, you know, these schools may in fact find, these districts may find property tax bills a little bit smaller next time around. And also they could prevent some schools, or like stave off the need for a referenda in some mm-hmm. schools. So, I mean, it's not like he's just totally making this up.
Right.
But it's not a pure property tax cut. You know, like think about when Governor Walker was, we had a budget surplus a few years ago. Governor Walker was running for reelection. What did he choose to do? Very noticeable tax cuts. Like if you have a kid, you get money. You remember? Like the state actually cut checks to people. You know, there was a sales tax holiday for school supplies, like very noticeable in your face tax cuts that were supported by Governor Walker and Republicans at the time. Putting money into school funding that eventually leads to tax reductions is one way to reduce taxes, but it's not like is in your face.
So as we often come back to here on the podcast in these days of divided government, Republican leaders in the legislature want one thing. The governor wants something different. What are sort of the political implications about, you know, whether these plans happen or not?
Yeah, one thing I want to just note is that as we're recording this podcast, we don't know for sure what the Republican tax cut is going to look like.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know, that because they've, so the governor doesn't really have that to react to directly yet. He was actually asked on Wisconsin Public Radio, look, if they don't pass your plan, but they pass a tax cut, would you veto it? And he's like, you know, I'm just not ready to go there yet. Mm-hmm. Cause he really doesn't have that plan to react to.
Right.
I could imagine a world in which he does veto what mm-hmm. what they send him if it does not include what anything that he has asked for.
Yeah.
So I think the difference in the debate that they're having now compared to the debate that they had in the budget mm-hmm. last year is that you kind of have to pass a budget. So, you know, that bill is going to go through. The governor introduces it. Republican legislators modified it. And so what you ended up, I'm oversimplifying here, was a budget that did not spend, you know, nearly as much as the governor wanted to spend on public schools, but it did have a big increase for schools compared to what they've gotten in recent years. And it didn't cut taxes the way that Republican lawmakers initially wanted to cut taxes, but it did cut taxes. So they both got wins, and mm-hmm. the budget became law. And, you know, it's a bipartisan moment for as much fighting as there was over that budget. With this surplus money, they don't have to do anything, really.
Yeah.
Like, the governor can come out with his plan and they can totally ignore it, and they can pass their plan and he can veto it, and everybody goes home and the money just sits there.
Yeah.
You know, it'll just be there for the next budget. You know, you'll start the budget, if everything goes as the Fiscal Bureau has predicted, you'll just start the next budget with more money in the bank.
But then sort of like, you know, politically messaging wise, it also provides ammunition for both sides, because on the one hand, if the governor were to veto a Republican tax cut, you know, then there's the messaging of, you know, the governor vetoed a tax cut for you people of Wisconsin. And then on the other side, if Republicans don't take up the education spending that the governor is asking for, the governor can come out and say, Republicans voted against money for schools.
Exactly. And so this is a way for Governor Evers to, you know, he knows they're going to propose a tax cut, which may or may not put him in a position where he feels like he can't sign it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way for him to kind of go in the office and say, and because he's introduced it as a special session, he got the opportunity to introduce this bill. If they don't do anything with it, at least they have to like gavel in and then gavel shut this special session, which is all they really have to do with the special session. And he can say they stood in the way of school funding. You know, there's a message for both sides in this one, the way that it's shaping up.
So speaking of large sums of money and special sessions and uncertainties in the state legislature and the governor's office, assembly leadership was out this week with their own, what was it, a bigger and bolder plan to help Wisconsin farmers than what the governor has proposed?
Yeah, that's how Speaker Voss described it. And this one, again, we don't have like the hard plan in front of us as we're recording this podcast. They basically came out in a public show of support for some concepts. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of them that Speaker Voss mentioned were some types of tax breaks to help small farmers pay for health insurance and help them offset property taxes. And he also talked about spending more than the governor had called for to help increase export markets, because mm-hmm. one of the things that we have in Wisconsin is a lot of milk. And turns out, you know, potentially, arguably, you can have too much milk if you don't have markets for those, and that drives down prices. And so everybody's looking for ways to increase export markets so that we can sell this milk somewhere else.
And so in the special session that the governor called, he did mention a specific target for exporting milk. Is assembly leadership looking to expand on that?
So this is the way that they're talking about this is a lot different than the special session on, you know, this big pot of money. They're saying, like, they're both talking about the same goals.
You know, yeah.
We're going to increase exports. Voss is just saying, if you're going to do it, we feel like you have to put more money behind it than the governor said you have to do. So, and then the governor, when he's asked about what Assembly Republicans are doing, he's like, hey, I'm just glad we're talking about it. So these are the types of things that people say when they're going to agree on something at the end of the day. You know, I think you're going to get a lot of bills related to agriculture sent to the governor's desk, and probably a lot of lawmakers and a governor will be able to take sort of a victory lap on this. You know, this is not something where it's going to be as adversarial, I don't think.
So basically, everybody is agreeing that they want to spend some money to help Wisconsin farmers. And speaking of spending money, this time at Southeast Wisconsin Restaurants and Bars, this was something else that came up this week. A change to Wisconsin's alcohol laws, potentially, but not just about bar closures. It went into this whole other direction about other liquor laws and such in the state.
Yeah, this has become what started as kind of a simple bill has become more complicated. And that is a very common theme when you're talking about changes to Wisconsin alcohol laws, is that they tend to grow, right? So the underlying idea, I actually didn't know that this was something, I missed it when it came out in 2019, but there was, back in May of 2019, the Wisconsin Restaurant Association was out there saying very publicly, we want to extend bar time in Wisconsin during the DNC. Mm-hmm. Because right now, state law sets bar time as 2 o'clock on weekdays, 2:30 on weekends. The Restaurant Association is saying, look, these conventions, which are going to bring in like 50,000 people, are geared toward a primetime TV audience. People are going to get out of there very late. And when they get out of there very late, they're not going to have time to spend money at our establishments if we have this bar time. Mm-hmm. Let's extend it to 4 a.m. Simple concept, basically. I mean, it could be, you know.
A bunch of folks in town working really late on the convention floor,
until 4 a.m.
and then they go out and they want to drink until 4 a.m.
I know. I feel like
being squares are going to go back to our hotel rooms and sleep and get ready for the next day of convention news.
We have certainly been asleep for hours by that point. I know. Listening to Wu-Tang melodies as we drift to sleep. You know, they have like lullaby versions of a lot of pop music. I wonder if there's lullaby Wu-Tang. Because
If not, we should try and license that somehow.
So there's that underlying bill. But anytime you try to make a change to alcohol laws, it seems like in the legislature, there's just a lot of fights to be picked on this stuff. And there is this ongoing dispute over how the state treats wedding barns in Wisconsin.
This is something we have talked about before on the podcast.
We have. John, I love that podcast. We did about the three-tier system, three-tier and down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one.
Go listen to it. It's all about alcohol laws, but fun. So this...
but fun, I promise.
The Tavern League has issues with wedding barns because, wedding barns are rural landowners who have these barns or other structures, and they use them to host wedding receptions or wedding ceremonies, and people drink there. They have alcohol there, but the Tavern League is saying, it's an unfair advantage to the wedding barns because, look, they don't have to be licensed like mm-hmm. we do. So we've got to pay these license fees to the state, and we have to have a licensed bartender there. And we face all this regulation that they don't face. The Tavern League says that's not fair. The Tavern League is a very powerful entity at the Wisconsin State Capitol still. And so they have been pushing to change this. And you have other free market conservatives who say, no, we don't need more regulation in the alcohol industry. Let the wedding barn owners flourish. This is a good thing. And so this is a very thorny fight within the Republican side of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
So this bill comes out. It's about the DNC on the surface, but there is this.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a very specific contained thing. It's like for the 5 nights that folks are going to be in town for the DNC.
They can drink late.
They can drink later. But I guess when trying to change anything about Wisconsin's drinking laws, then it opens the door or uncaps the bottle.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, to a more complication brewing, bubbling up.
it just never stops. Yeah, and so I don't know. We have established the session is going to be ending soon. By the way, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's office says that the last Assembly session day is going to be February 20th. That mm-hmm. is coming up. That's less than 2 weeks from the time that we are recording this podcast. And so to introduce a big change to alcohol laws at the end of session, I don't know how it's going to go. So it was circulated for co-sponsorship this week by Representative Rob Swearingen, who is, by the way, a past president of the Tavern League, and a lot of bills related to alcohol regulation go through his committee. Mm-hmm. It's co-sponsored by a few Assembly Republican lawmakers. It does not have any Senate co-authors. There's a chance that it is not just not on the radar, basically, of Senate Republicans at this point.
But so the bill that Swearingen, just to clarify, the bill that Swearingen is circulating is not just to extend the drinking hours.
No, it's paired together. It's the drinking hours plus regulate wedding barns, create this new $1,000 a year permit that they got to mm-hmm. get. And then it also has some other stuff in there about
Drinking at a racetrack?
At a racetrack. And then also saying very clearly that you can drink at State Fair Park, which mm-hmm. apparently is potentially an issue.
So it's not just a bill about extending drinking hours during the DNC. It also has these other things that folks, Swearingen and the Tavern League, would be behind generally.
Yeah. Well, I think, like the State Fair Park drinking and the drinking at the racetrack, that probably there's actually a separate bill on the drinking at this racetrack that is mm-hmm. already passed. So those are like kind of simple. They don't have to be lumped together, but, mm-hmm.
but they're trying to lump together.
It's like they're trying to create this bill that has to pass. You know, it has all mm-hmm. these things in it that are important to different constituencies of people. And if you want one, let's just do it all. But they're not terribly related.
So do we have time left in the session for this thing to get noticed and picked up and move forward? You said there are no Senate sponsors on there, which is notable.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I don't know. I mean, last session, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald introduced a bill that would, in a different way, regulate, have more alcohol regulation. Mm-hmm. And we referred to it as like an alcohol czar that he was pushing for.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was like end of session, out of nowhere. Fitzgerald comes out and says, this has the support of a broad vote coalition of groups. Well, it didn't have a support from all groups, right? It has like the Tavern League on board and the beer distributors on board, but these craft brewers didn't like it so much. And, craft brewers are already making some noise about this bill. They're worried about how it would affect them. I don't know how it would affect them. Just looking at the bill, like it is tricky to try to read a bill about alcohol and assume you know exactly what all the consequences are mm-hmm. because the wording is just so confusing. But also, I know wedding barn operators are pretty unhappy about it. They are contacting their legislators and some reporters and saying, we were not brought into this discussion. What's the deal here? So it's a potentially a heavy lift here. Fitzgerald's bill didn't go anywhere because, you know, people kind of freaked out about it. It got a hearing, but never passed.
Well, I guess we'll have to see how this all shakes out in two chambers. At least it doesn't have to pass 36 different chambers. That would be a lot of complicated work for us to cover.
That would be a really complicated government.
Yes, it would, but it would also crank out the hits.
Yeah. Well, you know, as the framers established 36 chambers as a checks and balances on government. Wow.
Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Whether you're into Method Man's in-your-face flow, you prefer the fluid lyricism of Raekwon, or you're really a fan of RZA's understated production genius, anyone can get new episodes of the WPR Politics podcast almost every single week when you subscribe on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. It's also available on Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify, as well as many other podcast apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.